सहनाभवतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. So then, here we've had Yudhishthira and his brothers go after the deer that took the yajna paraphernalia of the Brahmin. And they went after it, but trying to catch it, they couldn't. And now they're lamenting that, how is it possible that they couldn't have? Must be something they did wrong. So therefore, Nakula made that point. So Yudhishthira replies. Yudhishthira places large bow on the ground. There is no limit to misfortunes in this world, dear brother. We cannot always ascertain their causes, because it is the great god Dharma who distributes the fruits of both virtue and sin. Bhishma frowned. We have met with this disaster because I did not slay Dushasana when he dragged Draupadi into the assembly hall. Right? As soon as he saw her drag her in, he's thinking, I should have just got up at that time and just killed him. Right? Because he was also in that reckless mood and all that. So he wouldn't have been, you know, in that, had that focus and everything for fighting. Well, Bhima would have been so angry. He saw during the match that sparks and smoke is coming out of his eyes and ears and, you know, things like that. So he could have just at one moment just killed him like that. Then Arjuna, I too am to blame for our present misfortune, in that I did not retaliate when Karna uttered the cruel words that day, because Karna said so many things, he should have killed him at that time. And I too am to blame, says Sahadeva. I should have slain Shakuni at the dice game as soon as he cheated you, O king. Right? As soon as it's seen that he's cheating, you should have just killed him on the spot. You know, because that's not what you're supposed to be doing. It's supposed to be a fair match and everything, and then he's a professional gambler, and he's cheating. Yudhishthira turned to Nakula. It is certainly hot in this forest. Quickly climb a tall tree and look around for a lake. Your brothers are tired and thirsty. Having refreshed ourselves, we can then decide what to do next. Nakula climbed a tree nearby and gazed around. There seems to be water not far away, he called. I see what appears to be a lake and can hear the cries of cranes. Because wherever there's going to be lakes, you have the waterfowl. And they make very particular sounds. They don't make the same kind of sounds that birds who aren't ones that stay by the water. So that way you can tell where water is by their particular sound. As Nakula slid down the trunk, Yudhishthira said, Oh, handsome brother, go and fetch water for us all. Nakula emptied the arrows from a couple of quivers and left his brothers. He soon arrived at a large clear lake covered with lotuses and lilies. Kneeling down on the shore, he was about to drink when he heard a voice from the sky saying, O child, do not drink this water. This lake is mine, and no one may drink its water without first answering my questions. Nakula looked around. He could not see anyone. His thirst was intense. Not caring for the voice, he cupped his hands and drank the water. As soon as it passed his lips, he fell down dead. Right. So that's the thing with the kshatriyas also, because their constitutional tend to be pitta, you know, or bile. So it's fire. So their hunger, their thirst, everything's so intense. With vata, like the Brahmins would generally be, the hunger and thirst may become up. It'll come up and be there, and then it'll go away. Like that. But with the kshatriyas, it doesn't go away, like we see with Parikit Maharaj. And he was out hunting, he was so thirsty, he went to the Rishi's ashram. Because he didn't respond, he became very angry. So in the same way, you see here, this is just how it works. After some time, Yudhishthira became anxious. Nakula had not returned. He asked Sahadev to look for him. Sahadev followed his brother's path and also came to the lake. Seeing Nakula lying dead on its shore, he was grief-stricken. He touched his brother, looking for signs of life. Nakula seemed to be buried in deep slumber. He had not lost his bodily luster, but there was no pulse and he was not breathing. So it was as if he was dead, but at the same time, it's at the same time as he's like in a very deep sleep, because otherwise, when you die, the luster of the body goes, because the soul leaves the body. The soul being brilliant, then that's what makes the body have that luster. As soon as it leaves, the body goes dark, and you know it'll have those how you say, no pulse, not breathing. Yeah, Sahadev stood up, perplexed. Feeling an unbearable thirst, he went to the water's edge to drink. As he knelt down, he heard the same voice from the sky. Do not drink the water of my lake. First of all, answer my questions, and then you may drink. Sahadev was unable to heed the words. His thirst was oppressive. He took a swallow of the cool water and, like his brother, fell dead. Seeing that neither of the twins had returned after nearly an hour, Yudhishthira told Arjuna to go and see what had happened. With his bow at the ready and his sword unsheathed, Arjuna proceeded with caution. Finding the twins lying on the water's edge, he was seized with anxiety. He ran over to them and knelt by their sides. There were no signs of life. Arjuna was amazed. Who could have killed them? There was no indication of a fight. Arjuna looked around but saw only trees moving in the breeze and the water birds on the surface of the lake. He went down to the water's edge to slake his thirst, and again the voice resounded from the sky. O Partha, do not attempt to drink this water by force. It is mine, and you may only take of it. Take it after answering my questions. Arjuna shouted up to the skies, come into my presence and prevent me. You will not speak in this way again when you are riven by my arrows. He immediately released countless arrows, which, empowered by mantras, were capable of hitting unseen objects. Right, so if there's something there, let's say there's a demon who's making all these illusions and all that, he can chant a mantra that it will find that demon. Even though the illusions are there, you can't see him and all that. So he's used it before when the demons made so much trouble like that. Arjuna filled the sky with arrows, darts, and javelins. Again, the voice spoke. Your exertions are useless, Arjuna. Answer my question, or if you drink the water, you will die. Disregarding these words, Arjuna took a sip of water and fell dead alongside his brothers. Almost another hour had passed. Yudhishthira felt increasing anxiety. He now sent Bhima, or tormentor of foes. We have been seated here for a long time awaiting our brothers. I think you should find them and bring them back. I shall wait here. Bhima nodded and rose, running quickly along the path to the lake. When he saw his three brothers lying there, he was astonished. Surely this was the work of a powerful Rakshasa. It seemed hardly possible that any being could have slain Arjuna and the twins. Bhima considered that he would soon have to face a formidable enemy. He had best drink some water and overcome his fatigue in preparation for the fight. The Pandava ran down to the water, and again the celestial voice resounded in the heavens. O child, do not attempt to drink from my lake. First, answer my questions. Bhima thought that the voice must have come from whomever had killed his brothers. He looked around angrily. That wicked being would soon repent his vile act. Not caring for his warning, Bhima plunged his face into the water and drank. Like his brothers, he fell to the ground, dead. Yeah, so he's thinking, oh, that's from the, he's said this, and so I'll drink water and be ready for the fight. Alone, Yudhishthira waited, but when Bhima didn't return, his mind was filled with foreboding. He thought it was impossible that Bhima and Arjuna could be overcome in battle, right? Because there were also no war cries or anything else or things like that. Where were they? Perhaps they had found celestial delights by the lake and were enjoying them together. No, they would surely not neglect their duty. They had received his order and knew he was waiting. Brahma's paraphernalia also still had to be recovered. Something must have happened to prevent them from returning. Apprehensively, Yudhishthira set off along the forest path. Passing by trees covered in blue and red blossoms, Yudhishthira approached the lake. The warbling of birds and the humming of bees resounded in his ears as he moved quickly through the woods. Within a short time, he came to the lake, which seemed to him as if it had been transported from Indra's abode. It was covered with lotuses and surrounded by blossoming trees and varieties of wild forest flowers. By the side of the delightful lake, however, Yudhishthira saw his four brothers fallen to earth, resembling the four Lokapalas fallen from the heavens at the end of an age. Yudhishthira ran to his brothers and fell to the ground by their side. Breathing heavily, he shed tears of grief. He lamented loudly, his voice echoing from the tall trees around the lake. Mighty arm Bhima, you swore you would break Duryodhana's thighs in battle. Of what value is that promise now? Arjuna, how are you lying here today? Human promises may prove false, but how can those of the gods? We heard all the celestials proclaim your glories and declare that you would win back our lost kingdom, right? So even though Bhima may declare, I'm going to kill this one or that one, that's okay, a human's made that. That may fail, but he's saying, how can the gods, you know, the demigods, they've said, no, you'll be successful in battle and you'll win back your kingdom, and everybody's saying, so how could that be wrong? None will be able to vanquish him in battle, was Indra's prophecy about Arjuna. How has this come to pass? Surely my heart is made of stone, because it does not shatter upon seeing such a sight. As he looked at his motionless brothers, Yudhishthira was beside himself with grief. He cried for some time, his mind utterly confused. Gradually he managed to control himself and ponder the situation. Who could have slain these great warriors? There were no signs of battle. Their bodies were unmarked, and they seemed to have dropped to the earth in some deep, dreamless sleep. Yudhishthira looked carefully at the lake. Perhaps Duryodhana had made it and filled it with poison. No poison could kill Bhima, right? Because he had that boon from the Nagas that no poison could kill him. None, because they had given him plant poison, and then he was bitten by the snakes, so that was the animal poison. And so then, but they countered each other, and then when he drank the nectar and they got the benediction, so all this together meant no poison can bother him. Maybe the Kauravas had conspired with the Asuras to bring about the Pandavas' death. But again, what Asura could face Arjuna, who had single-handedly overpowered the Nivadikavachas? Right, there's 60,000 of them, and he defeated them, and that was all within the ocean. So Yudhishthira looked around. He could see no footprints. Arjuna's arrows were scattered here and there, but there was no blood, right, because he had shot them up into the air, but they just came back. It was unimaginable that Arjuna would not have hit his enemy, right, especially with those special mantras. He never discharged his arrows uselessly, like he wouldn't just be doing it for fun. Yudhishthira considered that some mighty being without a material body must have overpowered his brothers. He examined them closely. Although they appeared dead, they had not lost their color, and their features were unchanged. Their souls were surely still present, although the symptoms of life were gone. It seemed that their life force had been removed by the god of death himself, acting from within them. Right, so the life airs were gone, but the soul was there because he saw the symptoms of the soul. You know, not the breathing, that, because that comes from the life force. So he's thinking, no, this then has to be Dharmaraj himself would have to do this. Convinced of this, Yudhishthira thought he would discover the truth if he entered the lake. It was because of this lake that his brothers had met their death. Yudhishthira went down to the water, throwing off his armor, plunged in. Immediately he heard the same voice that had spoken to his brothers. O child, do not take this water. This lake belongs to me. And if you want to drink, you must first answer my questions. Yudhishthira gazed around. Who are you? He shouted. I am a crane living on moss and fish. Right? So none of the others asked anything. Bhima took it that, okay, here's the enemy. Arjuna is that, you know, what do you mean? This is some illusion. So he shot. The other ones just disregarded. So he's the first one to ask, okay, who are you? Your younger brothers, disregarding my warning, have been brought by me under the control of death. O king, if you do not answer my questions, then you shall become the fifth victim. Yudhishthira looked around in astonishment. He saw the crane on a tree bough near the lake. Are you Shiva or the foremost of the Vasus? Or are you a Marut? It is not possible for a bird to have killed these four mountain-like heroes. O strongest of all those endowed with strength, you have achieved what even the gods, Gandharvas and Asuras, could not do. I do not know who you are or what is your intentions, but I am curious to know these things, and I am also terrified. My heart is troubled and my mind confused. Please tell me why you stay here and what you desire. Yudhishthira then saw the crane transform into a huge, fearful-looking being. His large red eyes were pointed, and he blazed like the sun. Roaring like a thundercloud, he said, "I am a yaksha, not a bird. Hail to you. It was I who killed your energetic brothers for their own faults. Although forbidden to drink, they disregarded me. One loves life, he should not attempt to take this water by force. This lake is mine, and one may take its water only after answering my questions. O Yaksha, I do not wish to take what is yours. I shall try to answer your questions to the best of my ability. Please ask me what you will." The Yaksha began to place questions before Yudhishthira. What makes the soul rise out of his entanglement in matter? Who keeps him company? Who is his guide on that spiritual journey? And on what is he established? It is knowledge of the Supreme Lord that makes the soul rise. Godly qualities are his companions. Dharma is his guide, and he is established on truth. What makes one learned? How does one attain to that which is most exalted? How does one acquire a second self? And by what, O King, does one become wise? And Yudhishthira replies, "One becomes learned by studying the Vedas. By asceticism, one attains what is most exalted. Intelligence is like a second self, and serving one's elders makes one wise." And so these points that are made, it's not that this is just the opinion. Yudhishthira will be speaking from the scriptures. But because he studied them so well, he can come to that in conclusion, because so many things are said. But then you can see from that, this is what makes one at work. The Yaksha then asked about all kinds of subjects, ranging from worldly wisdom to knowledge of religion to spiritual matters. Yudhishthira answered them all without hesitation. Finally, the Yaksha said, "I am satisfied. Answer my last four questions, and I will restore one of your brothers to life. Who in this world is happy? What is the most wonderful thing? What are the tidings of this world, and how can one find the eternal path of religion?" With folded palms, Yudhishthira replied, "He was neither in debt nor exiled, and who lives simply, eating simple food in his own home, is happy. The most wonderful thing is that although every day innumerable creatures go to the abode of death, still a man thinks he is immortal," right? You know, like we see Duryodhana and everybody. "The tidings are that in this world, which is like a cauldron with the sun as its fire, days and nights as its fuel, and months and seasons as its wooden ladle, all creatures are being cooked by time. The eternal religious path is found only in the heart of great mystics." The Yaksha smiled. "You have rightly answered every question. Tell me which of your brothers you wish to have restored to life." "O Yaksha, let Nakula, as tall as a sal tree and endowed with a broad chest and long arms, be brought to life." The Yaksha was surprised. "Bhimsena is surely more important to you than Nakula, O King, and Arjuna is your chief support. Why do you ask for Nakula to be revived?" Then Yudhishthira, "He who sacrifices virtue is himself destroyed," replied Yudhishthira, "and he who preserves virtue is in turn preserved by it. I am therefore careful to always observe virtue. For me, great virtue lies in refraining from cruelty. It is superior to all worldly gain. Thus I ask for Nakula. Both Kunti and Madri are the same to me. In myself, Kunti still has one son, but Madri now has none. With a desire to behave equally towards my two mothers, I ask for the life of Nakula. Since, O Pandava, you consider abstination from cruelty superior to both profit and desire, then let all your brothers be restored to life." As the Yaksha spoke, the four brothers rose from the ground as if from a sleep. They felt refreshed and free from hunger and thirst. Yudhishthira then asked the Yaksha, "Who are you, O great being, who assumes the form of a crane? Tell me in truth your identity. Are you a god? Perhaps you are my father himself." Because otherwise, why would the Yaksha be asking about spiritual subject matters? You know, or even the religious one. It'd be more on niti and stuff like that. You might have an occasional person. Yes, that's possible. But still, he's not an ordinary, even if he was a Yaksha, he's not an ordinary Yaksha. Yudhishthira guessed correctly, and the Yaksha replied, "I am indeed your father. O best of the Bharatas, know me to be Dharma. I have come here with the intention of meeting you. fame, truth, self-control, purity, simplicity, charity, modesty, steadiness, asceticism, and celibacy are my limbs, right? So these are all the limbs of Dharma. These are all the different aspects that are that make up, because Dharma means is the inherent quality of something and what it has. So therefore, then religion itself has these. You know, religion means what is the fame, what's the truth, the self-control, the purity. All these are required to be able to deal properly with anything. I am reached by humility, impartiality, peacefulness, asceticism, purity, and abstention from cruelty. You possess all these qualities, dear son. By good fortune, you have conquered your mind and senses and practiced virtue. I wanted to test you, and I am fully satisfied. Ask me for boons, and I will bestow them. Those who are ever devoted to me need never experience misfortune. But, so then, how do you say? See, now then, Yudhishthira will then. Then will then ask for a thing. So his point is, Yudhishthira bowed respectfully before his father and said, "My first desire is that the Agnihotra of the Brahman, whose fire sticks were lost, not be destroyed." Right? Because that's what they came there for. You know, because everybody else, it would be a matter of asking for, you know, we win the battle, we this, we that. No, but his thing is, no, we came for the purpose of helping this Brahman who was in distress. So the first thing is that his yajna is not going to be disturbed, right? Because now they've been sitting there for hours. So that was his first point. Yeah. O son of Kurti, it was I in the form of a deer who carried away those sticks. I shall return them to you. Ask for some other boon. So then what other boons he asks, we'll see at the next discussion. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.